27. Gwen didn't like it, not at all. She didn't like the idea when she heard it. She didn't like the amount of time and effort it had taken to put the idea into practice. She didn't like the jeopardy Martin had volunteered to endure to make the idea work. Of course, she had stated all of these objections before they put it to a vote, and she'd still been outvoted. She didn't like that either. She peered around the wooden barrier at the dust cloud in the distance and said, "This is a bad idea." Britt exchanged a knowing look with Roy and said, "Maybe so, but it's the bad idea we're going with. Sorry." Britt, like Gwen, was sitting in the bed of the wagon, which was stationary on top of a rise, well into the charmless scrub desert they didn't know was called the Scapa. After the hill gave out, Roy managed to keep the cart rolling for a surprisingly long time on momentum alone. But still, they were eventually forced to abandon it and continue on foot. They had been delighted to find their friend's footprints, clearly visible and easy to follow. They couldn't understand why the others seemed to be walking in a regular formation, or why there were only four sets of footprints. They decided that one of them must have been injured, and the others were carrying him, which only strengthened their resolve to catch up as soon as possible. They were less delighted when the trail led them to a peculiar-looking mound that suddenly sprang to life and chased them all around the desert. The only time it got close enough to hurt any of them was when it nearly headbutted Roy in the back. Roy was aware of its attack and leapt at the last second, wrapping his arms around the creature's neck. His plan was to cling to the creature and attack its face while it stumbled to a stop. To everyone's surprise, the creature did not stop. It continued running forward while Roy hung around its neck like an albatross. The beast's running stride was not smooth, and it was not long before Roy lost his grip. He threw himself to the side as he fell and avoided being trampled. The monster twisted slightly in the direction Roy had gone, then stopped, scanned its field of view, caught sight of Gwen, and started chasing her with the exact same speed, body language, and intensity it had when it chased Roy. Eventually, they stopped the walking pile of dirt by leading it into a fetid little bog they found, and surrounding it while running laps of the bog. The creature didn't know whom to chase, so it just spun around in circles, stirring itself into the water as it slowly melted into loose, watery mud. They knew this was a temporary reprieve. The slop was clearly already trying to reform into some sort of shape that would dry out and continue the chase, but it looked like that would take quite some time. They split up and searched the area, looking for the continuation of their friend's trail, or at least Martin and Gwen did. Gwen found the trail resolving itself from the frenzied, chaotic tracks left from the dust creature's pursuit of both parties. She was a bit unnerved that instead of the familiar, tight, four-person formation, the trail was now a recognizable pattern of three people walking in formation and a fourth walking alone. Gwen called out to the others. Martin was off on his own, also looking for the trail Gwen had found. Britt and Roy were talking. Gwen didn't know what they were saying, but when they heard her say that she'd found the trail, they both smiled in a way that made her nervous. They were the smiles of two people who were sure they knew what to do, and that the first step would be talking you into it. Gwen was right. They were sure that they knew what to do, and they were right. They did have to talk Martin and Gwen into it. They never fully convinced Gwen, but by then she was outvoted. Counterintuitively, instead of following the trail, they backtracked to where they'd left the cart. They spent the minimum time possible repositioning the cart and making modifications, using all of the tools and scrap wood they'd brought, and cannibalizing the sides of the cart in the process. The cart was now a heavily modified flatbed. There was still a small bench by the tiller. Roy sat there, waiting to spring into action. Britt sat cross-legged on the floor of the cart, thinking through the next several hours and trying to hide her excitement. Gwen sat at the back, next to, but not touching, the hastily braced wooden wall that they'd constructed and nailed to the back of the cart. Gwen peered around the wall again and said, "This is crazy. We're making a mistake." Roy said, "Oh, come on, Gwen. This isn't a mistake." "But you agree it's crazy?" Roy shrugged. I don't know. Back when I worked at Lockheed, half the stuff we came up with sounded crazy at first. And most of it was. Some of it actually worked, though. That stuff made it into the planes. We ended up with aircraft that could do things no one else's planes could. Yeah, Brit's plan sounds crazy, but I believe it'll work. Remember, you live in a city made of diamond. That sounds crazy. That was her idea.
Brit smiled. Gwen did not.
Even if the idea might work.
It will,
Brit interrupted.
Even if it might, Gwen continued. How are we sure about this barrier? I'm not even allowed to lean against it. How can it possibly hold?
Roy said, I told you. It's not designed to take force from this direction. If you want to get out and lean on it from the other direction, it'll hold all day. You could lean a car's weight on the other side, no problem. I had to prioritize where the stress loads would be. We had limited time and materials.
Gwen looked at Brit and asked,
Does that make sense to you?
Without hesitation, Brit said,
Yes, it does. And even if it didn't, you heard the man. He was an aeronautical engineer at the Lockheed Skunk Works. He has real-world, non-magical engineering experience. Even if I didn't think he was right, I'd defer to his judgment.
Roy said, Thank you.
Brit said,
It's the truth.
Gwen said,
I liked you both more when you liked each other less.
She jumped down off the cart and walked around to the other side of the barrier to look again at what they'd done. The sides of the cart, and most of the spare wood, had been used to make a large, heavy plate, which was affixed to the back of the cart. It was like someone had taken the tailgate off their pickup truck and replaced it with a tabletop from IKEA. What spare wood remained was used to make thick braces that extended from the plank to the bed of the cart at 45-degree angles. Gwen hated to admit it, but it looked as if a great deal of force would be needed to push the barrier over from behind the cart. Of course, if you pushed from inside the cart, the only thing holding the plank on was the grip of the nails, thus the no-leaning rule. One thin plank, similar to a 2x4, leaned against the back of the cart, forming a very narrow ramp to the ground. The plank itself was studded with small strips of wood. They were nailed in at regular intervals all the way up the height of the plank. These were the only parts of the whole apparatus that had been designed and carried out by Martin, and as usual, they were the most seemingly haphazard parts, and Martin was absolutely convinced that they would work. Thinking of Martin caused Gwen to look again at the column of dust headed their way. It was much closer now. Clearly, it was making better time than anyone had anticipated. Gwen watched and saw a small human figure running over the top of a hill, followed by a much larger figure running slightly faster. The larger figure nearly caught the smaller, but at the last second, the smaller one made a sharp turn, causing the larger to overshoot, stop running, and look around. The smaller figure stopped and bent over, breathing heavily and keeping an eye on the larger figure. The larger figure finally caught sight of the smaller and attempted to give chase. The smaller leapt out of his way, causing another full stop and confused scan. They repeated this a few times, until the smaller figure felt ready to continue. Then the smaller figure took off on a dead run, straight for the cart.
Okay, get ready, Gwen said. Martin's bringing it this way.
Brit said,
Great!
Gwen, please remove the wheel chocks. We're go!
Gwen muttered,
If Martin gets hurt, you're going to be go.
She did as she was told and removed the rocks that were wedging the wheels in place. With that done, she hoisted herself back up onto the flatbed of the cart. Roy sat facing forward on the driver's bench, holding the tiller with both hands as if he expected it to try to wrench itself free from his grip. Brit stood, grasping the brake lever and peeking over the plank at Martin and the dirt monster's approach in the distance. Brit said,
Roy, I'm going to try to give you a countdown from 5, just like we discussed.
Roy said, Roger.
In the distance, Martin shouted,
Get ready! We're here!
Everybody's enjoying this but me, Gwen thought. That means either they're all wrong or I am. Funny, I can't see how either of those ideas should cheer me up at all.
Gwen settled on the flatbed, one hand gripping the side of the driver's bench. The other held the cord that controlled her emergency brake. If things went according to plan, the brake wouldn't be needed. If they didn't, the entire cart would probably disintegrate, making the emergency brake superfluous. It didn't matter. She'd made the stupid thing, and she was going to be ready if the time came to use it. Britt said, 5, 4, 3. Gwen heard an impact as Martin's foot hit the lone plank that acted as a combination ramp and springboard. She saw his hands grasp the top edge of the shield. 2. Martin's feet scrabbled against the toe holds he'd installed. 1. Martin launched himself over the top like he was vaulting a fence. For a seemingly endless moment, he hung in midair above the cart. Then he started to descend. His legs and pelvis had just fallen lower than the back of the shield when Britt said, "Impact!" And the dirt monster rammed into the back of the cart. The shield bucked and creaked, and the cart shot forward. Martin, not being on the cart, but rather hovering over it, did not move at all until the top edge of the shield hit him in the lower back. His head, arms, and torso rolled backward, and for an instant it seemed like he might fall over the shield and land on the dirt beast's back. But instead, he balanced, teetering painfully on the splintery top edge of the shield, all of his weight resting on his lower back. He glanced down and saw that the beast was still running, chasing him, and the cart along with him, but that the collision had imparted so much of the beast's momentum into the cart that it was now rolling several feet in front of the creature. Martin knew from experience that the creature would accelerate, and even if it didn't, the cart was rolling downhill now, but would be going up the next hill soon. The creature would hit them again, and if he was still balancing like a human teeter-totter when that happened, he would fall off the cart, and instead of him and his friends using the creature to push their cart across the desert, his friends would use the cart as bleachers, to watch as Martin was trampled to death by Mr. Topsoil. The idea of being stomped on by dirt amused Martin, but not enough to make it happen. Martin grabbed the top of the shield with both hands and pulled, moving his center of gravity forward and scraping the rough wood across his tender lower back. He rolled forward, catching one of the angled braces between the legs. He tumbled to the bed of the cart, landing in a heap at the base of the brake lever. Britt was forced to alter her surfer stance to keep him from taking her feet out from under her. Unfortunately, the beast struck the shield again while she was shifting her balance, and both she and Martin fell back onto the shield, which squeaked and groaned at the sudden load striking it from a direction it was never meant to be struck.
"Brakes!"
Roy shouted.
"Brakes!"
He was fighting the tiller with both hands, trying to avoid rocks and keep the cart from overturning. Britt and Martin both attempted to crawl forward to the brake handle, but the cart reached a trough between two hills, slowed, and the monster struck the shield a third time, pushing them both back and knocking the wind out of them. Gwen let go of the emergency brake cord, knowing that using it in this situation would be disastrous. She threw herself toward the brake lever, pushing it back with both hands. The cart slowed. The hope was that if they slowed the cart enough, they might be able to get the beast to maintain constant contact with the shield. Then they could use its endless energy and enthusiasm for chasing to power them forward. That was the hope. The reality was that Gwen shoved the brake lever as hard as she could, and it slowed the cart enough that instead of sustaining a tremendous blow every few seconds, it sustained a hard blow roughly every second. Roy yelled, struggling to keep the cart upright.
"I think I can start turning this thing around, but we're gonna need more brakes!"
"I'm trying!"
Gwen yelled back, pushing with all her might on the brake lever, eyes squeezed shut with effort. No matter how hard she pushed, the lever didn't seem to move any farther than it already had. Martin got to his feet and joined Gwen, but Britt said,
"It's no good. This is as slow as we're gonna get. We should have beefed up the brakes more."
Roy said,
"Okay, that's a design flaw. We can make this work as is, but we'll remember the problem for Mark II."
"Yeah,"
Gwen shouted,
"'cause we're totally going to do this again someday."